And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Today we're going to talk to Murray Dobbin, murraydobbin.ca. We're going to talk about this recent resolution in the Canadian Parliament condemning the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, BDS. And Murray has got a great column about it. You can find it at Counterpunch and Tyee, and I believe at Rabble. But best place to go is murraydobbin.ca. And we're going to talk to Matthew Lee of innercitypress.com. He has won the distinction of being removed from UN property and have his office closed. We're going to find out he's a journalist. We're going to find out how that happened, why. And we will talk to Rick Serling, who is with the Serious Solidarity Movement. He's one of the founders. And we want his update on what's going. He thinks is going on in Syria today, whether the ceasefire will hold and such questions as that. And I think we are joined already by Matthew Lee. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Here I am.
Thank you very much, Matthew, for being on the program.
Sure.
I think you said it's news to me. I've never heard of a journalist, an accredited journalist at the United Nations. You've been there for 10 years. You have an office. And on February 19, you were summarily told to leave, and they, if I understand it right, they hustled you out of the building with some damage. Why did all?
Yeah, absolutely. I was given 2 hours after reporting, you know, on the UN with increasing detail for almost 10 years. I was given 2 hours. They said you have to leave in 2 hours. I said I'm covering the Security Council meeting on Syria. They had kind of a minder follow me for the next couple of hours. I guess they realized that to stop me sort of midstream might be even more clearly censorship. But as I was writing up the meeting, I managed to ask some questions to the Turkish ambassador and others. As I was writing up the meeting, they came with 8 guards. They grabbed my phone. I was periscoping. They turned the phone off. They grabbed my computer. They pushed me down the escalator. I mean, not head over heels, but like pushing, you know, repeatedly down the steps. And I kept saying, hey, you know, I have my coat is upstairs. It was a pretty cold night. My passport is upstairs. They said, no, more, less talking, more walking. They said, you're a trespasser now on UN premises.
How could you be trespassing?
Anyway.
How is that
because
possible?
They physically tore off my pass. But then they said, now you have no business being in the building. The most amazing thing about this, to me, was that there was no due process at all. I can tell you what they now say the rationale was, but there was no attempt to speak with me before imposing this penalty. And what the underlying event was, you know, I'm a journalist here. I have a position which I don't think is that extreme, which is that events held in what's called the UN press briefing room, which is every day they have the noon briefing there, they do press conferences there, heads of state come there during the General Assembly week. This is a room that all that's open to all journalists.
Yes.
So when there was an event that took place there in January 29th, and I wrote about it in advance the day before. I said, I'm going to cover it. The day of, I went to cover it. I decided, because for a variety of reasons, to not be a participant in the event but just cover it, to do it from what they call the interpreter's booth, which is like where they have one for English and one for French. And it's glassed in. It's totally visible, but it's kind of soundproof, like you're not actually then part of the meeting. But I was, you know, it had sound, and I had my phone up, and I was periscoping the meeting. And they asked me to leave. I said, if security, since it's not listed as a closed meeting anywhere, if security asks me to leave, I'll be out in a moment, but I don't, you know, that's what it's going to require. I mean, not being removed, you know, physically removed by security, just being informed on what basis a journalist was being asked to not cover something in the press briefing room.
Yes.
Finally, the spokesman, whose name is Stéphane Dujarric, he came in and he went kind of informal. He said, you know, I want to go home and see my, quote, effing kids. Please do me the favor of leaving. I said, I'd like, you know, I'm all for family values, but to me, it's 5 o'clock. To me, it's important. I want to cover this event. On what basis is it closed? Finally, one UN security guard came and said, the spokesman wants you to leave, and I left immediately. 3 weeks after, with no discussion, no asking why I wanted to cover it, which I'm also prepared to explain, they never asked. They just used it as a pretext to throw me out of the UN.
Yeah. That's what struck me, is that I don't understand. And I'm really glad you're talking about this, because after all, the United Nations has a rather grand title, and we think of it as a marvelous big institution. But when I read your comments and the comments of others, I get the impression it's kind of like a small town where there's a lot of personalities and
no
a lot
rules,
of toxicity.
Yeah, the thing that this is, and I sort of knew it. I mean, I can give you bigger, you know, much bigger examples in my case. Like, For example, most people that have looked at it accept that the UN negligently brought cholera to Haiti by mistake. Mm-hmm. They brought in peacekeepers from Nepal. They had cholera. The sanitation was bad. Anyway, many people died. Up to 10,000 people died in Haiti. The UN has never paid a penny because they are immune. They said that you can't sue them. And they also haven't voluntarily done anything. But in this case, I've described to you being, thrown out. Once they got to the gate, they pushed me out, and they threw my laptop on the ground. And so, if this, I did as I would anywhere else in New York City. I called the police. And the police said, we can't do anything. They said, it's the United Nations. We have no jurisdiction in their building and even the sidewalk in front of it, right up to the street. So
until you land on the street, they don't have any jurisdiction.
No, even on the sidewalk, I didn't. I couldn't believe it. I said to them, could they kill me inside? And they said, absolutely.
And then, by the way, then you're very diligent. You went across the street, and for a while you reported from across the street.
I did. There was an intermediate step, which is even more amazing, to me, more amazing. So that happened on a Friday. I was sort of discombobulated. I tried to talk to the police. They said, there's nothing you can do. I needed to cover, I'm a journalist. So there was another meeting, also on Syria, believe it or not, the following Monday. And I knew I needed to cover it, but I had no... Not only had my badge been deactivated, they'd physically torn it off my chest. So I asked another journalist to sign me in, as a guest, almost as a tourist, figuring if I get into the building, as almost any New Yorker or traveling tourist can, I can at least, maybe they won't let me ask questions, which I like to do, but at least I can be, just so you know, that like at the Security Council, most of the quotes that you see written up are not done on camera on the UN television stakeout. It's that ambassadors going in and out of the meeting speak on the record to journalists. It makes the journalists look like real insiders. It looks like they have a lot of sources. Actually, this is just feeding at the trough. Some of the ambassadors are reading their comments off notes, but since it's done in that format, there's a premium on being there. So I tried to get signed in as a guest, and I was told, first of all, no, we don't think you can even sign in as a guest. And then a more supervisory UN security guy came, and he said, you got to get out of the pass office. You're banned from all UN premises. And this all goes back to a disagreement about the rights of the journalist to cover a meeting. I didn't fight with security.
And this is all in the absence of any hearing, any actual interview with you.
Absolutely zero. None at all. The woman, in fact, one of the two articles, I think there's BuzzFeed wrote about it, Business Insider wrote about it, they admit that they never even attempted to talk to me. They said that seeing my video, it's sort of like almost like self-incrimination. They said, seeing the video, obviously if I thought I did something wrong, I would not have not only live broadcast the meeting that I was covering, but then taking that live broadcast and put it on YouTube. So clearly there's a disagreement. Like, if I thought it was wrong, I wouldn't have said I was going to do it in advance, done it, and then put it online. But I think it's one, they take it as a pretext, and we could get into why. But what it really has shown me is that there are no protections for journalists at the UN.
Well, you're beginning to provide some. There's a group called FUNCA. There's UNCA, the United Nations Correspondents Association. So you started FUNCA.
It's a little more complicated. FUNCA stands for the Free UN Coalition for Access. It's actually an alternative. There's a long-standing group here called UNCA, and I have to say they're part of the problem. Basically, and this may be true in other beats that people cover, it's basically a club of the biggest and most powerful, Reuters, AFP, AP. These guys don't face any threat from the UN. In fact, they work quite well with the UN. The UN gives them embargoed advanced copies of reports.
That's part of your mission. You've begun to report on them, which, by the way, we all appreciate that because everybody wonders who's doing the reporting.
Like and it's not just, to me, it's not just sort of catty gossip. But I'll tell you, initially I started reporting on them because they used this entity to try to get me thrown out of the UN in 2012. And I found out about it because I did a Freedom of Information Act request, and Voice of America, which is a U.S. government media, was involved. And so I got a lot of documents, many of which I put online. But since then, people should know this, there is a current scandal around. There's always been scandals around the UN, rapes by peacekeepers. Again, there's also good work being done. But there's a current serious financial scandal around the UN in which three high-profile people have been indicted for bribery at the UN. Hmm. One is a former president of the General Assembly, known as John Ash. He's from Antigua and Barbuda. Another one was the deputy ambassador of the Dominican Republic, Frank Lorenzo. And another one, the richest one, the actual money bags of the whole case, is a guy called Eng Lap Seng. He's a Macau-based casino
I can see why you make them uncomfortable.
These guys, in a nutshell, they basically bought access to the UN through the correspondence group. They gave money to the correspondence group, and the next thing you know, they had a photo op with the Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon. So I reported on that, and then this was the meeting that I wanted to cover. What I wanted to see in this meeting, which they did in the press briefing room, whether they had received, been contacted by the district attorney, you know, that's covering the case, whether they were being audited by the UN, and I still have a right to cover it. I told them
absolutely.
If they wanted to rent a private room to do their meeting, I wouldn't go in. I have no desire. But if you do it in the briefing room, I'm going to cover it. You know, and
Matthew, we're going to have to go shortly, but I want to just say people should go to your site, innercitypress.com, and they can go to funca.info and get the outline of the case, I assume. And they can also sign up.
And you'll also find real news on Yemen, Sri Lanka, any variety, Syria, obviously, which I'm covering. But this internal game, the UN's kind of lack of protections and lack of hypocrisy and not living it up to its own principles, has become one of the themes that we're covering.
Well, it's a very important story. Matthew, we thank you very much for the time, and I hope people sign your petition on that site.
Okay, hoping to get this reversed and, get back to work.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Matthew Lee, and he is a proprietor, I'm going to call him, at theinnercitypress.com. It's a very curious story. And often with big institutions, these things happen where they're continually explaining to everybody what freedom is and due process. And then, of course, somebody asks a cranky question and finds himself standing on a sidewalk in the cold. And you say, how did that happen? So this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And, hey, we want to remind you, David Barsamian is coming to town. And that is March 20, 12 noon, Hart House Debates Room. Go to CIUT.fm, get your ticket. It'll be a reasonable price, $30, and you get and that's tax deductible. That's tax deductible as seems to work as a term. Again, March 20, 12 noon, David Barsamian, who's a legendary public, known for his support of public broadcasting, done some interviews which have been cited in many, many books and places, particularly those done with Noam Chomsky.